Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 39.
He looked me up and down. I said, all right. And then next to me stood another brattle chap, old Dick Tweig. Now, old Dick was a rather long, thin face with a great big long nose. Now, I could see out the corner of my eye, there was a fly running up and down old Dick's nose. I shall never forget it. And old Captain Birchall, the sergeant, was with him. He stood back and he said, there, Sergeant, there's a soldier for you, he said. Doesn't even flint with a fly on his nose. That were too much for me. I couldn't stand no more of that. I couldn't stop laughing. Oh, hell. Old Birchall said to the sergeant, take that man's name, take his name. He didn't. I had 7 or 8 days CB for that. Well, no, CB used to be a laugh. Because they had a officer, head of the guards, sergeant major, head of the guards, and he used to come and put you through your paces for CB. You had to do 1 hour's hard training at night, between 7 and 8. Well, that spoils your night. You had to have pack drill, rifle, and he used to have you on this parade ground for hour and march up and down and make you run and double and march, and because the other your mates all stood along the railings laughing at you. And then just as you were coming off, think, oh, that's finished for tonight. When you got to the gate to come out the road to dismiss you, he'd say about turn and double march and run you all around the parade ground again. But it was a real laugh, you know, the chaps used to come and watch each other. But we all had to do one way or another. Well, eventually the day came along to go abroad. Now, that was the 29th of March, 1915, when we left Chelmsford to go to France. The transport, that was the horses, there was no cars, there no motor much. All the transport was horse-drawn. Well, the transport, the cookers, the ambulance, and all the lot went on the day before. But we went on the 29th of March. Now, we always used to have our gambling school at the Three Cups. Every night we used to play solo. Well, on the boat going over, we went from Folkestone. When we left Chelmsford, we had a right royal send-off. I think half Chelmsford come to see us off, because living there all those months, we got to know everyone. As a matter of fact, several of our chaps married Chelmsford girls. But all they gave us a marvellous send-off. But any road, we went away over on the from Folkestone to Boulogne. Early hours of the morning when we got to Boulogne, we marched through Boulogne, and as we went through the streets, the people were leaning out the bedroom windows cheering us. They were pleased to see us then. And so we went into a camp on the hill outside Boulogne. Well, I think we stayed there a matter of a couple of days. And then we was moved away from there to the front. Well, we went to the railhead, which was some miles behind the line. In fact, you could only just hear the rumble of the guns, and that'd be some distance away. And we marched from there into Armentières. Well, old Sid and I, we were still together all the blooming time. We never left each other's side. Didn't matter what happened, we stuck together all the time. Well, then, at Armentières, we went up to some trenches there. One or two of ours lost a life through it. But anyway, we had to go in then with some other regiments. I don't know whether it was a Monmouthshire regiment or what, but I think they were Welsh regiments. We spent a week or so there, And then we moved from there to one of the most dangerous spots there was in trench warfare at that time. That was at Plug Street Wood. And that was some distance from Armentières. I know it was quite a long march from there till we got to Plug Street Wood. And that's where we took over then properly as full-time soldiers, as you might say. We relieved the regulars there and took over territorials, took over all that part of the front. Well, that was the 48th South Midland Division, 20,000. That was four brigades of four infantry regiments, and each one had a battalion of 1,000. So the four and four brigades, that was 16,000 infantry, and the rest, of course, was artillery and transport. When we took over at Plug Street Wood, the regiment that we relieved told us, you're very, very close to the Germans, just a matter of 100 yards between you and them. And, of course, in between Wood, in front of their lines, they had batches of barbed wire. In front of our lines, we were the same, batches of barbed wire all along. But they said, don't, whatever you do, put your head up and look round. If you want to have a look, put your head up quick and down quick. Don't leave it there a second. He said, because they got snipers all along, and we soon found that out. Even the first day that we was at Plug Street Wood, there was an oldish hand from Wolverton in the Terriers, been in them a long, long time. He put his head up, and naturally, instead of getting down quick, he had one straight through the brain. Well, now, within a week or so, we lost quite a few like that. And then they came along, in fact, one up our street, along Young Len Powell. Bertie Spong from Wolverton was the first one to go at Plug Street, and he had a long look, and he's still looking. Now, we was very, very close to them. And as I say, they issued us then with periscopes, sort of a long box, about 4 inches square, a long one, with a mirror at the top and a mirror at the bottom. Well, you push that up just above the sandbags, looked in the mirror at the bottom, which showed you clearly the whole of the part between in no man's land. Showed you quite clearly no man's land. But that didn't last long. After a day or two, as soon as you put your periscope up, instead of your head, they used to fire and smash the glass at the top. After a day or two, we began gradually to break into that sort of life. And occasionally, there would be a batch of shell fire from them. And then it'd go all quiet. Then perhaps later, with a couple hours or 3 hours quiet, then there would be a machine gun loose off. And that was the sort of going on for a time. Well, now, the first thing that I remember, or any of us remember, was we shouted across no man's land to the German lines, and we started to shout, hello, Fritzy, how are you, Fritzy? And they shouted back, hello, Tommy. And that used to carry on very often, during the day or in the evening, shout at one another. But on one occasion, what we noticed, there was one of the Germans could speak pretty good English, because the first thing he shouted at us was, how would you like to be in Lockhart's? Well, now, Lockhart's in those days was London eating houses, similar to the Lions houses and the present day Wimpy houses. They was eating houses in London, and he could speak good English, and he shouted back and told us that he was working in London prior to being called back just before the outbreak of the war. He was called back to Germany, and he was on the opposite sides to us, and often he used to shout at us. But a little while later, he didn't shout, because I expect he was killed, I don't know. But anyway, I know on one occasion he shouted across. He said, don't forget, keep your heads down. He said, the Prussians are relieving us shortly. Prussian guards, he said, so keep your heads down. Well, now that was the sort of banter that went on for a time. After several weeks, then you began to realize what war was really all about. You'd left behind the glamour of joining up, marching through the country, villages with the bands playing, people cheering you, and it was all excitement and marvelous. But now you began to realize what the war was all about. Now in the trenches there, early on it was fascinating, but soon we realized what it was. You'd get pouring rain, cold, wind. You had your 7 to 10 days in a trench with no protection. Often, after heavy rains, you would be shoe deep with slush and mud at the bottom of the trench. You'd done your 2 hours on sentry, your 4 hours off, which meant rest or sleep as best you could get it. And that, often you sat down on a fire trench and had your sleep, and sometimes wet through and cold, and no hope whatever of drying your clothes, with just the small exception that here and there along the trench you had a dugout. Now, there was very little room in those dugouts, impossible for all of you to go and have your 4 hours rest, mainly used for casualties. But where we was at Plug Street, now it was impossible to get either in or out of those trenches in daylight, because you had to go across open land to get from the wood to the front line. There was only one line there, trenches. You had to go from the wood across what you might call several fields, and that was always flat and open. And the casualties had to be taken out in the dark. I know that for a fact, because I was wounded there. And the stretcher bearers, they carried me. And every little while, when the Germans sent up a very light which lit the ground up, they simply dropped the stretcher, laid you on the ground and lay flat face down so that you couldn't be seen. And then when that light died out, they carried you on forward. Well, now that was the routine. Now, as to keeping warm, instead of going in a dugout, every so far along the trench, we used to have an old brazier. Now, you saw those old braziers outside. When they were repairing roads years ago, they had the old brazier. Well, now the rations used to come up at night in the dark, and when they brought the rations up for the day, they always used to bring several bags of coke and a bit of wood, and then you could light your old brazier and have a brew up, because they brought you tea, sugar and so forth, and water, which we had to get by chance of water from that old farm at the back. But any road, Then we used to have a sort of a brew up and a tin of bully, and that's how we lived for those 7 to 10 days in the front line. Now, during the night, when they brought that up, they used to bring the mail up with it. That was for your letters and your parcels. Well, now, I've had a little moan now. I've done a little bit of moaning, but now, as I've told you many times on tapes that I've made before, you'll never break the spirit of a British soldier. Never. Don't matter how rough or tough it is, the worse it is, you'll always get somebody come up with a little bit of humour. Well, now, I'll try and alter the tune a little bit now for a laugh. And I've told you about my old mate, Sid Carroll. Well, this was a real laugh. We'd had a few casualties, and along came the officer along the trench, and he said to me, I'm making you a lance corporal. I thought, oh, blimey. Now, they must have been short of NCOs, or they would never have given me a stripe. But they did. He made me a lance corporal. Well, now, oh dear, oh dear. When it comes to that, a lance corporal, well, do you know, I started at the beginning. I went all through the war, and I reckon I used to sew them stripes on with butter, because they always seem to slide off. As a matter of fact, at the finish, the last lot I had a court-martial and reduced to the ranks and sent abroad again. Well, now, that's how I ended. I started as a private and I ended as a private. Well, my old mate, old Sid Carroll, as soon as they made me a lance corporal, he said, if you think I'm going to call you corporal, you made a hell of a mistake. He said, because all our life you've been Aught Monday to me and you're still going to be Aught Monday. Well, now, the discipline then, in those days, it was carried on very much as it was years before in the old Boer War, and that by then they hadn't altered the strict military discipline. So, of course, when he said that, I said, oh, no, boy, I said, if you call me that, I'll slap you up. Well, when the mail came up, I often used to have a parcel from my mother. And when I was at home before the war, I used to be very fond of kippers. And she always used to put me one or two kippers in my parcel. Well, on this particular occasion, when I had my parcel, and I'd got one or two kippers in it, so when it came evening time, we'd got the old brazier going with a coat firing, and I put these kippers on, and you know how they smell. Well, there happened to be a breeze blowing towards the German lines then that night, and that old boy, that him as could speak English, he was there then, and he shouted across, and he could smell these kippers, and he shouted across, he says, can we come to supper? And I shouted back, yes, I said, bring all your mates, I said, and we'll have a right royal do. Well, now you see, that was quite a happy gesture from him. Well, after a time in the trenches, you began to get fed up with the food, and you look forward to being relieved and spend a few days in the wood to rest and have some hot food, because day after day eating bully beef, that was Libby's and Fray Bentus bully beef and McConaughey's, which was meat and vegetables in a tin. They were very nice. And then, of course, you had your old-fashioned Tickler's jam, which you had the choice of two, really, as we used to say at the time. You either had plum and apple, or apple and plum jam, which you liked best. But anyway, to get down to the what actually happened, when it became close on your time to be relieved, the message used to go along the trench, "Oh, we're being relieved tonight, back in the wood for a rest." And so it happened. Well, when it got dark, there used to be guides come up to guide you out where you'd got to go in the wood. Well, now that wood, as near as I can tell you, was set out very much like a little London, because there was pathways cut in all directions, and they was laid down with duck boards, so you walked on, and each roadway or path through the wood was named, and they was named after streets in London, such as Tottenham Court Road, Regent Street, Oxford Street, and so on. And then the places where you had to go to rest, where your company or battalion was, that was set out, such as Piccadilly Circus, Trafalgar Square, Hyde Park, and so on. Well, all those paths and centres was marked out and named, so that the eye command naturally knew where everyone was. Well, now, when you went back, you came out the trenches, you wandered across the open ground, and a guide took you to the path which led to your particular place, which was usually the same that you always went to. Now, when you got there, because it was night time, dark, you could only go in and out in the dark, but when you got there, then you settled down. You had your ground sheet, which was a, well, sort of a rubber thing, ground sheet, which you laid down. And then, in my case, I always used to do the same, because if your feet was warm, you was warm all over. Well, I always used to take my tunic off, put my feet in the sleeves, and wrap the tunic round my legs. And I used to put my boots at the top and my hat on my boots for my pillow, and wrap a blanket round me and my greatcoat over the top, and you could sleep as sound as a bell. Well, now, that's what I always used to do as soon as I settled down to kip for the night. And in the morning, well, then the cookers was in the wood all ready for you. And there was a Wolverton chap on our cookers and the Pellamine, but so I used to do very well. Well, now, I had a section, as I told you. I told you I had the mighty rank of a Lance Corporal. What the hell for, it don't matter. But anyway, that was my job then, to go and draw the rations for my section, about 8 or 10 of us. And I used to go and get the breakfast. That used to give it you for the section on a tray. And this chap from Wolverton, Phil Wills, he always used to put me quite a lot of fat in the tin so that we could dip a bread in it. Well, there was rations of bacon or sometimes sausage. And then I used to have to dish that out round to each one. Well, my old mate, said Carroll, well, you put it in your tin lid, you see, the anything like that, you use your tin lid. And I used to give old Sid my tin lid, and I used to draw his, and he used to have mine as well, put it in together. Well, because naturally I used to put a sort of two nice rashers of bacon, one each, and that carried on very well. Well, now, dinner times, perhaps you had what they call skilly. Well, that was a jolly good feed. There was meat and vegetables and that, and the old-fashioned stew. And you had to go and draw that H1 at the cookhouse in your mess tin. Well, that carried on, and then one or two occasions you'd perhaps have a good old lump of roast beef. I don't know how the hell they roasted it, but it used to be a good old chunk. And oh blimey, that's the old clock again. Well, I know on this particular day I went and fetched it. Oh, it was a hell of a big lump of beef. And I had to cut it up, tissue it out, one each, you know, round about. And I'd give old Sid me tin. And I cut two nice knobs off, one for him and one for me, in the tins, and dished the other round. Well, there were one of the chaps there, he didn't come from this district, but he was in my section. And I don't know whether he caught out of a gristly lump or not, I don't know, but he turned and he said to me, he says, oh, he said, I don't know, he said, you two buggers had a nice lump of peace, he said, but mine ain't. Well, I nearly lost me stripes over that, but anyway, it soon blew over and we were pals. But it was so simple how you could get into trouble with things like that. We used to pass the time away in the daytime with the old card school. Four of us, we always used to be playing solo. Well, that used to pass the time away very nice, but because there was no pay, and if one of us run out, well, we used to sort of have a sub off each other, because you wasn't paid until you went out for a long rest at a village behind the lines. That's when you were paid. But in there, well, you had to use what money you got. And we used to sit and play cards during the daytime to pass the time away. And I always remember there in that wood, when we wandered about a little bit, there was all growing wild in the wood was daffodils, very similar to what you get in the woods in England. You get bluebells and primroses, but there was quite a lot of daffodils growing about wild. That was very interesting. Well, after a few days' rest, then you had to return back up to the front line again. Well, now, on the way back, I always remember, because each company, each battalion, had its own little cemetery. And as we went back, all came in, as you went along these duck boards, close by was our little cemetery. I always remember that, because I used to have a look across when it was dark, when it was light enough perhaps just to see. You could see the wooden crosses, and I used to think as I went by them, I thought, blimey, I wonder if I should be one of them the next time round. But anyway, the guide used to lead us along, and in the dark, it was narrow, and along these duck boards, you had to catch out the back of the one that was in front of you, so as you didn't get sort of lost on the way out. Well, now, when you got back in the trenches, because you relieved those that was there, they came back in the wood, you went back in your trench. But now I'll just tell you a few tales that you might find a little interesting, because you had to do something else you went haywire, what with shelling and so on, but you used to get quite a lot of fun and a lot of laughs.